Searching podcasts for the Daily Perspective. Okay, the Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
If making it easy to be an illegal alien isn't enough, how about offering a reward for being an illegal immigrant? No sane country would do that.
No sane country, no. But a country where politicians run everything? Yes! Welcome to the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and a touch of absurdity as we press our way towards the weekend. Good to have you along. Thanks for being there. How you doing? I hope you're doing fine. It is, as I said, the Friday edition, the 6th day of March 2020. And the weekend is just around the bend. It's actually closer than that. You can almost touch it from here, but please don't stretch too far. You could fall over. Wow, I tell you, today is Friday, and I'm really glad. This is one of those Fridays I've been looking forward to all week long, just to kind of tie a knot in the week and put an end to it. It's just been one of those weeks. Equipment problems, all kinds of weirdness going on. I'm looking forward to a weekend with more of the same. If I'm absolutely honest, it's just going to be more of the same. Oh, man. I don't know how long I spent last night trying to debug an email issue. My wife and I both have email at the same place. I set up email addresses on my personal web presence, my personal web space, years ago for both of us, and we've both used them for a long time. We set them up in our computers and our mobile devices, and we've never had problems with them. And then last night, my wife is working with she's been tutoring a young man, and she's trying to help him. She's looking over a paper he's working on and sending him corrections, sending him things back, saying, this is wrong, your punctuation is bad here, this kind of a thing. She's been just kind of working with him to help him refine this thing he's working on. And she says to me last night, can you come look at my email? It won't send this out. And I thought, oh, great. She's done something. There's something with the attachment she's trying to send or something. And then it just wouldn't send. I couldn't figure out why. I finally worked out a way to send what she needed to send, but not through the regular channels. And it really bothered me. So it kept my attention for a while. And I stayed up much later than I normally do trying to debug that problem. And it was crazy because our emails are tied to a website, my markcongleton.com website. And we've never had issues with them. And so I went to the web portal for the web mail, and because that's where the web mail would be on a web portal. And so I went there last night and looked, and sure enough, all her email is there, and it worked. So I just used the web version of the email program to send her email along, and that took care of that problem. But it works just fine. Nothing is wrong there. I went into all of the settings and double checked everything to make sure everything was just exactly like it's supposed to be. No change. Everything is so. I deleted her email from her mobile device. Yeah, I did, and reinstalled it again. And since it's an IMAP server, everything is fine. It's all still on the mail server, so it would reload everything. No, it didn't. It was very, very strange. She'd been having problems for a while, and to be honest, I'm surprised she didn't have more problems than she did because she never deletes email. I mean, never. She's got, seriously, when I looked last night, she had almost 10,000 email messages, unread email messages in her inbox. And it's all sale ads. It's all emails from retailers. And she never looked at them. And I asked, can I delete these? She said, sure. And so I did. I also went beyond that and completely and totally deleted her entire email account from the server and set it back up again. And I can still access it via the online portal, but I can't access it any other way. And it's really strange. So when I get through today, I'll be online with my web host trying to figure out what the hey, what are you doing over there? Because it's not only affecting her. This morning, I just double checked my email. Let me go back over there, pull it up on my iPad, and the last email I have in my inbox from my personal email account is Wednesday, 2 days ago. So there's something fishy going on that end of the world, and I don't know what it is. Hopefully we can figure that out today. I hope so. I'd like to be able to dive into the weekend with a success. You know what I mean? I think we all would. I think we all would. Oh, man. Well, Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas, dropped out of the race. And I think we kind of all saw this coming. Yesterday morning, I talked about a story where they were going to have a meeting and examine their options. And apparently examining their options meant they were going to step back. And she didn't. Did she actually say she was withdrawing from the race, or did she say they were going to be re-evaluating things like Michael Bloomberg did? Well, now that Senator Elizabeth Warren has stepped aside, the questions and allegations about how sexism may have hindered her candidacy are making the rounds. Yep. Warren pointed to her gender as an obstacle in earning the nomination now that the remaining contenders are white men in their late 70s. Sexism is the trap question for every woman, she said yesterday. If you say, yeah, there was sexism in this race, everyone says, whiner. And if you say no sexism, about a bazillion women think, what planet do you live on? Senator Kamala Harris, Democrat from California, as her own campaign was declining, also wondered openly about whether America was ready for a female president. And now that Warren is out, Harris has revisited that question. She said Thursday to CNN, this election cycle in particular has also presented very legitimate questions about the challenges of women running for president of the United States. Look at what's happened. There are no women currently in this race. But the reality is that there's still a lot of work to be done to make it very clear that women are exceptionally qualified and capable of being the commander-in-chief of the United States of America. There is, however, evidence that sexism was not Warren's problem, but rather a general and widespread unpopularity across demographics, including women. Warren not only lost her home state of Massachusetts, which is embarrassing enough for an allegedly serious presidential contender. But in her home state, she also lost the female vote to former VP Joe Biden. According to Massachusetts exit polls, Biden beat her by 10 points with women. Sanders beat her by 7 points with very liberal voters and by 14 points with voters who support Medicare for All. And the former college professor lost college-educated voters by 5 points to Biden. There are certainly some voters who believe a woman is less qualified than a man to be president, but even if you take that away, Warren probably had too many issues to overcome to have a chance at the nomination. She lied about her race. She was dishonest about the tax implications of her policies. She tried to make personal wealth the worst thing in the world in a country where people aspire to be personally wealthy. Even Bernie Sanders, despite still having a chance at the nomination, is learning that some of those issues can cause problems with voters. Elizabeth Warren was essentially a thoroughly unlikable candidate. She was right up there with Hillary Clinton as far as giving people the creeps. She just wasn't likable. And then she started lying. She lied about being a Native American. And when people found out that she was lying, they weren't happy. And then, coupled with the fact that she used that lie to get a job at Harvard University, they were unhappier. And when they found out that in that job in Harvard University, the reason they hired her, and Harvard said so, was because she would be their first Native American hire. She was a female Native American, she had the double whammy going for her. She was a member of two victim groups, and so they loved having her on their staff. People were unhappy about that. And then they started looking more closely at what she was promising she could do. And they realized, hey, wait a minute. Unless she turns the world upside down and changes everything about the way things work, she can't do these things. Hey, look at this. When you do the math on her programs and the taxes that she says she's going to raise on just this tiny segment of people, that won't raise enough money to pay for what she says she's going to do. But she swears she's going to do it, so where is she going to get the rest of the money? Ruh-roh, Reggie, that would be from you and me, from everybody. So she was lying about that, too. She lied about so many things and was caught lying about so many things. And as a true progressive politician, she doubled down on the lies. To the point that with her genetic makeup in question, she swore she would have a blood test, do a DNA test, and see how that turned out. Whoops, didn't turn out so well. 1/1024th Native American. My dog has more Native American heritage, I think. I probably have more. But she stood by it. She still, to this day, even though she will apologize, I was wrong to do that. There's always a but attached. A big one, usually. And she kept on moving forward. Kept on lying. Kept on ranting and raving. Kept on yelling about how unfair everything in America is. And kept sounding essentially like a female version of Bernie Sanders. So, not only was she unappealing because she was lying to everybody, she was unappealing because her ideology was insane. She was putting forth a vision of America which can't happen unless there is a complete and total fundamental transformation of the country. And who does that remind us of?
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
In order for that to happen, everything that we hold dear, the founding principles of our country, have to be abandoned. Which, to progressives, is no biggie. Because they're already trying to program the young people in America to believe that this country was founded on racism, that it was founded on slavery, that it was founded on so many things it was not founded upon. They don't want the younger generation to understand that at the time, these things we see as evil today were commonplace and not seen as evil. It doesn't make them right. It just means that's history. And it's not the way it is anymore. They don't want the young people to understand that our founding fathers argued and disagreed and compromised and came to conclusions together to craft a founding document which would set the stage for the abolition of slavery, because they, for the most part, agreed that slavery was an evil thing which needed to end. And it took some time for it to happen, because these things do take time. You're talking about a huge shift in the way people see things and think about things. A lot of people had to be convinced, a lot of people had to be shown the evil of slavery. And who fought them all the way until that day slavery was abolished? Who fought them? It was the leftists, the Democrats. They fought them all the way. They fought all the way until the 60s with objecting to everything about making life better for minorities in America. They fought all the way into the 60s until Lyndon Johnson convinced them that unless they embraced it, they would continue to lose at everything. But if they embraced it, even though they didn't believe in it, they would have this segment of our population voting for them
for the next couple of hundred years. And you know what? That nasty man was right. And Elizabeth Warren and people like her don't want anyone to understand how evil those people actually are and were then. They want people to believe that it was them who corrected everything, who were fighting for the rights of the downtrodden. When in truth, they're fighting for power and control and using those victim classes as steps to get to where they want. So, Elizabeth Warren is out of the race. Does that mean that all of these feminists will now be throwing their support behind Tulsi Gabbard? Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here. You're there. Please let me drive. I've done this before. It's the Friday edition of the podcast. And honestly, it's really great to have you along. Wherever or whenever you may be listening to this crazy little show. It's the Friday edition. We're diving into the weekend and there's a lot to talk about today. And hopefully we'll get around to all of it. I hope. Well, we've had Super Tuesday. It's come and gone. We're looking at it as a distant speck in the rearview mirror now. And one of the crazy things that happened on Super Tuesday was that California went head over heels for Bernie Sanders. In retrospect, this is understandable because the people in California are more and more disconnected from reality every day. So, of course, they would be having a little bit of an episode and voting for a communist. Well, Democratic primary voters in California and Colorado both are warming up to socialism. But in Florida, there's a new poll. It shows that Bernie Sanders is getting crushed in the state's upcoming primary election on the 10th of March. According to a statewide survey of Democratic primary voters by St. Pete Polls, former Vice President Joe Biden holds a whopping 49% lead over his Democratic Socialist rival in the Sunshine State. 61% to 12%. 61-12. This poll, which was conducted on March 4th, included Democratic candidates Mike Bloomberg and Senator Elizabeth Warren before they suspended their campaigns, which could mean that Biden's lead could be even larger than the poll indicates. The poll results follow weeks of controversies surrounding Sanders' campaign after the one-time frontrunner for the Democratic Party nomination maintained his praise for the literacy programs of late Cuban dictator Fidel Castro. He did that during a February 23rd interview on 60 Minutes. Sanders' pro-Castro comments were blasted by fellow Democratic lawmakers, including Florida Representatives Donna Shalala and Debbie Mucarcel Powell. Even former gubernatorial candidate Andrew Gillum, who campaigned with Sanders during the 2018 Democratic primary, has criticized Sanders' comments. In the weeks since Sanders' remarks, videos have resurfaced of Latin American leftists praising Sanders, including Venezuelan dictator Nicolas Maduro and the niece of Fidel Castro, Mariela Castro. In one of the videos from June of 2016, Maduro described the presidential candidate as, quote, a revolutionary friend, end quote, echoing similar comments made by Nicaraguan ruler Daniel Ortega in August. Meanwhile, Diario de Cuba reported February 27th that during a 2016 interview, Mariela Castro said that she would vote for Sanders if she were a U.S. citizen. So Sanders has the support of the communists, of the dictators. They love the guy. Gee, who'd have thought Well, Sanders' unpopularity in Florida isn't surprising, given the state's large anti-socialist Hispanic electorate, including many Cuban, Venezuelan, and Nicaraguan voters who fled the far-left regimes of their home countries. While Sanders has dominated the Latino vote in other primary states, the survey by St. Pete Polls shows him significantly underperforming his rivals among this demographic. Florida Hispanics prefer Biden over Sanders by a 59.9 to 9.5 margin. The former VP also crushes Sanders among black voters in Florida, 67.9% to 8.5%. Although the Vermont Democratic Socialist has argued that his campaign is uniquely positioned to defeat President Trump in a general election, given Sanders' ability to turn out young voters, the Florida poll suggests that doing so would actually hurt him, since he trails Biden by 47 points, 60.7 to 13.5% among 18 to 29-year-olds. An analysis by 538 only gives Sanders an 8% chance of obtaining the necessary 1,991 delegates needed to win the Democratic nomination prior to the party's convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin this summer. So Bernie's chances are actually very slim with people who actually know about socialism and what it actually is that is designed to do and what it has done to the nations which have embraced it. And Joe Biden, Joe Biden, I want you to think about this. A guy who sniffs kids and basically has dementia is ahead of Bernie Sanders. That'll tell you how popular he is. And don't forget what I've said here before, and that is that socialism is a lie. It's a lie designed to seduce the gullible. And those who perpetrate the lie, those who push it on our society, have pretty much taken over running our education system. So the younger generations don't understand just how bad socialism can be for a country. They keep clinging to hope that socialism is what's going to cure America from all of the evils it has. And they're not taught the truth about America. They're just not taught the truth about our history. They're taught leftist opinions of our history. They're not taught our history. And that's what Bernie Sanders and people like him are embracing. And that is who Bernie Sanders is embracing, himself. Those people who have been pre-programmed by the leftists, the progressives, who are controlling our education systems today and propagandizing our youth. Everything he hopes to push for depends on the lies that American students have been told and believe, because we're heading into a couple of generations now where the ones who are in school now are being taught these things, and their parents, many of their parents, were also taught a lighter version of these things. And so their parents don't really argue against the lies because they were also taught the lies. It's a bad situation for America. And it's a sad situation that there is actually someone running for office and receiving a decent percentage, not a great big percentage, but a decent percentage of the vote. When people are polled, they say they like the guy. And the only way you really can like Bernie Sanders is if you are completely ignorant of the truth of socialism. Well, the people in Florida who have come from socialist countries, escaped from them, know the truth about socialism. And they're trying to let everybody know this is bad stuff. Bad stuff. Did you see the article which has popped up in the last few days? And I don't have it in front of me, but there was a guy who was a political prisoner in Cuba. And I believe it was in 2016. A group of Democrats went to Cuba and they had him a little visit is what they had. And they were all, they visited this political prisoner in prison. And Bernie Sanders actually was dumb enough to say that he didn't see what was so bad about Cuba in the first place. So here we have an American citizen on trumped up charges in prison, imprisoned by this dictatorship. And a member of his home country's government says, well, I don't see what's so bad about it, things here. Bernie Sanders is an idiot. And sadly, he keeps getting reelected to positions. As I've told you before, this is a guy who has never really had a real job. The closest he's come to handling any kind of finance is helping his wife make their millions by handling their ad buys. I told you about this before, remember? His wife is in charge of making their advertising buys, and as a result, she gets 10 to 15% of the money spent on the ad buys. And when you're running for president, that's a lot of money. That'll buy you some houses. Especially when you add little under-the-table payments from your presidential rival's campaign. Thank goodness that Bernie really doesn't have a chance. It's beginning to be obvious now as we move forward. There are those who say he still has a path to the White House. There's a lot that has to fall down before that could happen. But there are those who say, so you're saying there's still a chance? No, I don't think so, but some people think so. And hopefully sanity will prevail in America. And an overwhelming group of people will show up to vote on Election Day and show the leftists there are really not that many of them anymore.
Dave's not here.
No, he's not. He's a busy guy. Did I tell you? I know I did tell you that my buddy Dave Mack, is working with Nancy Grace now. And Nancy Grace is about to, in the next few days, about to debut a new show on Fox Nation. Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. It looks like it's very interesting stuff. And that's right up Dave's alley, by the way. I mean, he's joked around that if anything ever happened to his wife and they searched his house, they would think he did it, regardless of who did it. They think he did it just because of all the crime novels. That's really right up his alley. So congrats to them. That's going well for them. Oh, man. It's the Friday edition of the podcast. It's great having you in today. Thanks a lot for being there. It is the sixth day of the month of March, the year 2020. If you've been in a coma, hey, welcome back to the real world. And if you've been out for a while, surprise, Donald Trump's the president, and Mitt Romney is not happy about it, apparently. He's a Senator Mitt Romney from Utah now. He's somehow convinced, he got President Trump to endorse his candidacy, and after he won, he turned on President Trump, and he's been talking smack against him ever since. Yeah. Mitt Romney, just an observation before I get into this story, Mitt Romney should be thankful it's not Hillary Clinton who's in the White House. Or he might wake up having, you know, he might wake up dead one day. Utah Senator Mitt Romney said yesterday, people are tired of politically motivated investigations, such as Republican Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson's probe into Burisma Holdings, the Ukrainian gas company linked to Hunter Biden. Romney's a member of the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, whose chairman, Johnson, plans to hold a vote on March 11th to subpoena Andriy Tylysenko,
a former consultant for a firm that Burisma hired to fight against corruption allegations. Johnson's effort to issue the subpoena could be halted if Romney votes against the measure, according to CNN. Republicans hold 8 seats on the committee to the 6 seats held by Democrats. Romney told reporters yesterday when he was asked about the upcoming subpoena vote, "There's no question that the appearance of looking into Burisma and Hunter Biden appears political. I think people are tired of these kinds of political investigations. I would hope if there's something of significance that needs to be evaluated, that would be done. Perhaps the FBI or some other agency that's not as political as perhaps a committee of our body. We also have a lot of work to do on matters that are not related to Burisma. We probably ought to focus on those things." Romney, who was the only Republican lawmaker to vote to convict President Donald Trump on the abuse of power impeachment charge in February, said he would be meeting with Johnson to discuss the merits of his investigation into Burisma. When asked if he'll support Johnson's subpoena effort, Romney said, "I'll make that decision after I've had the chance to meet the chairman and see what information he has." Johnson's committee is investigating whether Hunter Biden leveraged his relationship with his father, former VP Joe Biden, to help Burisma combat allegations of corruption. Johnson wrote in a letter to Democratic Senator Gary Peters of Michigan on Monday that his committee has, quote, received U.S. government records indicating that Blue Star sought to leverage Hunter Biden's role as a board member of Burisma to gain access to and potentially influence matters at the State Department. Blue Star co-founder Karen Tramontano also reached out to State Department officials throughout 2016 to discuss Ukraine and Burisma Department records. Records show, that is. Telezenko, the former Blue Star consultant, has provided some Burisma-related documents to Johnson's committee, but a non-disclosure agreement is preventing him from handing over any more without being compelled by a subpoena. I would think that a subpoena would be in order then. But wait, wasn't Romney's name linked in some way to Ukraine and Burisma? Weren't there stories here recently? Yes, Romney's top aide, a guy named J. Cofer Black, his two aide in the 2012 presidential campaign, this J. Cofer Black served on the board of Ukrainian energy company Burisma Holdings. Been there since 2017. So, Romney's former presidential campaign aide, his top aide in his presidential campaign, has been serving on the board of Burisma since 2017. I wonder why he got that position. Yes, you are smelling fish. So Romney's objecting to investigating Burisma. And the guy who was his top aide when he was running for president is on the Burisma board. That's what you call putting two and two together and coming up with something very suspicious. Very suspicious. Romney, I perceive, is protecting his own hiney. That's what Mr. Romney's doing. Good Lord. It seems like everything, whenever Trump does anything, guilty people sit up and start pointing fingers and screaming. You remember that old, the old movie Invasion of the Body Snatchers? Remember when the alien creatures who had taken on the form of human beings would spot someone who was not one of them? You remember what would happen? They would tilt their head back, open their mouths, and screech this inhuman screech, this horrible sound, pointing their bony fingers at the humans as others would gather and chase them down to have them drug off to be invaded by themselves by an alien pod entity. I kind of think about that whenever leftist, progressives, Democrats start pointing fingers and making accusations against Trump. their entire basis for their hatred is because he's not one of them. He's not one of the corrupt, one of the deep state insiders, one of those who are making their fortune by basically being criminals in office. That's the image that comes to my mind. Well, yesterday, President Trump did something else that's making the progressives tilt their head backs and screech. They moved forward with withholding funding from sanctuary cities after an appeals court ruled that such a move was legal, part of a broad push by the administration to end the controversial policies it says are making Americans less safe. He said, as per recent federal court ruling, the federal government will be withholding funds from sanctuary cities. They should change their status and go non-sanctuary. Do not protect criminals. The Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York last month overturned a lower court ruling that stopped the administration's 2017 move to withhold grant money from the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Program, which dispenses over $250 million a year to state and local criminal justice efforts. The decision conflicts with rulings from other appeals courts across the country concerning sanctuary policies, indicating a Supreme Court review is ultimately likely. New York City and liberal states, including New York, Washington, Massachusetts, and Connecticut, sued the government and the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York backed them, ordering the money to be released and stopping the government from putting immigration-related conditions on grants. But the appeals court ruled that it cannot agree that the federal government must be enjoined from imposing the challenged conditions on the federal grants here at issue. Sanctuary's policies limit local cooperation with immigration authorities and bar law enforcement from complying with immigration and customs enforcement, or ICE detainers, requests that ICE be alerted when an illegal immigrant is being released from local custody. Proponents of sanctuary cities have argued that it makes communities safer by encouraging illegal immigrant victims of crime or witnesses to cooperate with law enforcement. What? Let me read that for you again. Proponents of sanctuary cities have argued that it makes communities safer by encouraging illegal immigrant victims of crime or witnesses to cooperate with law enforcement. So, these idiots actually believe that if they believe that protecting these people will make them come out of the woodwork and expose themselves, people who know they've broken the law, people who know they're here illegally, people who know they're not supposed to be here, these people, they believe that if they just treat them nicely and play nice with them, that they'll come out of the woodwork and reveal themselves to the authorities. That's what they believe. Now do you see why people call these people crazy? Yikes. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio said back in January, quote, the Trump administration's scare tactics destroy trust in law enforcement. The day our police ask for immigration status is the day people stop reporting crimes and sharing information. It's the day we stop being the safest big city in America. Whoa, wow. We won't let that happen. But administration officials have pointed to a host of cases when an illegal immigrant has been sprung from custody after a detainer was ignored and then gone on to reoffend. In a letter to de Blasio last month, ICE acting director Matt Albans noted that ICE's New York City Enforcement and Removals Office issued detainers on 7,526 subjects who had criminal histories, including 3,500 assaults, 1,500 DUIs, 1,000 sex crimes, 1,000 weapons offenses, 500 robberies, and 200 homicides. Yeah, those people, the community around those people, they're going to talk to the cops. Wow. The administration has deployed elite Border Patrol agents to sanctuary cities to help ICE track down and detain not just illegal immigrants, but illegal immigrants who fall under the description I just gave you of those people who have had criminal histories, assaults, DUIs, sex crimes, weapons offenses, robberies, homicides. That's who ICE is looking for. The Justice Department announced a slew of measures, and Trump has called on Congress to pass legislation that would allow victims of crimes committed by illegal immigrants to sue sanctuary cities and states. And they should be able to. Because those sanctuary cities and states are enabling criminals to continue their criminal activity. When you release them, they just go back and do what they know how to do. And that's harming others. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. It's the Friday edition of the podcast, and we're moving forward. As usual, I'm skimming through social media during the breaks. And, this precious meme pops up on Facebook from our friends over at Occupy Democrats Logic. It's a picture of Taylor Swift. And it says, more people in the USA have been dumped by Taylor Swift than died from the coronavirus. Oh my gosh. Oh, that's just precious. I love that. That's absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect. Oh man. Hope you're having a good day. Hope you're looking forward to a great weekend and that you've got lots of great stuff happening coming up as the weekend comes towards us. Oh man. Oh gosh. Okay, I was just looking for something here. Hang on just a second. It's funny that I had something set up. I had it right there. And is that it? No, it's not. Doggone it. I'll just have to pass by that. It's a I got a story here that I really wanted this bit to work with, and now, of course, I can't find it. That's a well. All right. Well, wait a minute. There we go.
The Cambridge police acted stupidly. No matter what you've heard, if you like your doctor or healthcare plan, you can keep it.
I'll make our government open and transparent.
Yeah, sure you will.
So that anyone can ensure that our business is the people's business. When there's a bill that ends up on my desk as president, you, the public, will have 5 days to look online.
Lie.
Find out what's in it before I sign it. I would not take money from federal lobbyists. They have not funded my campaign. They will not run our White House. And they will not drown out the voices of the American people when I'm president of the United States of America.
Sure.
The last thing we should do is raise taxes on the middle class. You will not see your taxes increase one single dime.
Wow. And that's just one example of the stack of lies that we had to listen to throughout the Obama years. Well, if you thought that Obama, the first black president who helped deliver more government control of health care, nominated two Supreme Court justices who helped legalize gay marriage and basically ushered in the era of men being allowed to use girls' restrooms and locker rooms, would have some staying power with the base of the party, you might just be wrong. According to exit polls from Super Tuesday, the base of the party wants to put Barack Obama behind them. The Washington Times reports Mr. Obama remains popular in the Deep South, where black voters play an outsized role in Democratic politics. But from Maine to Minnesota, voters say they're no longer thrilled with the man who brought them the first universal health care plan and flexed his executive pen to grant a deportation amnesty to Dreamers, to ink a deal with Iran, and to commit the U.S. to curbing greenhouse gases. Under normal circumstances, the party looking forward would be a good thing. Nostalgia for the past during a time when you're looking for a new party leader doesn't always translate into motivated voters. For example, 2008 was the first presidential election following the death of Ronald Reagan, when the Republican Party didn't have an incumbent president running. Finding the next Ronald Reagan was a huge, though unofficial, theme of the GOP primary. It felt like all the candidates were comparing themselves to Reagan, or presenting themselves as his successor. It didn't work. So in one respect, it's good for the Democrats that they're moving beyond Barack Obama. But the problem is who he's been replaced by. As the party has moved further to the left, Obama's radical agenda has become too centrist for the base of the Democratic Party now. Despite Joe Biden's victories on Super Tuesday, the base of the party is actually gravitating towards Bernie Sanders and his agenda, not Joe Biden's. The Washington Times says even in states where Mr. Sanders got clobbered Tuesday, such as North Carolina, his idea to replace Obamacare with a more expansive Medicare for All plan wins majority support. Ideas such as tuition-free public college are backed by more than 70%, according to NBC's early exit poll tallies. In California, 56% of Democrat voters back Medicare for All. Free public college was supported by 75%, and socialism was viewed favorably by a ridiculous 53%. Biden's electoral victories have less to do with him and his agenda than they do with his perceived electability over Bernie Sanders. Voters who support the socialist agenda of Bernie Sanders but voted for Biden are simply terrified that Sanders is destined to lose in November. And exit polls show that beating Trump was far more important to voters than picking someone who was ideologically on the same page. This, of course, presents a real problem for Democrats, should Biden win the nomination. If you're not fired up to support the candidate, there's a good chance you'll actually be less motivated to vote. In 2004, a Pew Center poll showed that Bush voters show the highest level of positive support for a presidential candidate, while Kerry supporters showed the highest level of voting against the opponent. Since they've been asking the question, how'd that election work out? How'd that election work out for Kerry? That's what the question is. So while Biden may have technically be more electable, the energy and support are really for Bernie. If Biden wins the nomination, he won't have the kind of enthusiasm that Bernie Sanders would, especially if Bernie's supporters think he got screwed over. So people are ready to move on. They're ready for the next level, the next step. It was only introduced by
fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
And now they want more. They want to go deeper. They want to continue that transformation. But they know. They know they can't do it with Bernie because he'll be clobbered in the general election. Well, who's your option then? Yeah, it's Joe Biden. Remember, Joe Biden is a plagiarist. He's a liar. He always has been. Let's look back to a story from last year, coming from Big League Politics. In 1987, when Biden was 45, he briefly ran for the Democratic nominee for president, hoping to prevent Republican President Ronald Reagan's Vice President George H.W. Bush from attaining office. Unfortunately for Biden, allegations that he plagiarized an advertisement from an unsuccessful British politician, along with evidence that he lied about his college degree, led him to drop out of the primaries. The New York Times reported at the time that Biden appeared to borrow heavily from the advertisement during a televised debate, changing only the details to suit his life. Biden initially claimed he came up with a statement himself while traveling to the debate. He later changed his story, saying that he borrowed some of the ideas from Kinnock, a Mr. Kinnock, who was running in a British election. But it reflected his life. His advisors, would later admit that while the speech, as did Kinnock's, referenced having ancestors who were coal miners, Biden had no named relatives who worked as coal miners. This was only the first of two scandals Biden suffered in September of 87. Later in the month, Biden went on to tell a voter identified only as Frank that he had a higher IQ than him, as was evidenced by Biden graduating in the top half of his college class with 3 degrees. Guess what? I have audio.
A new question stemmed from taped remarks of Biden during an April campaign appearance in New Hampshire.
I went to law school on a full academic scholarship, the only one in my class to have a full academic scholarship. Went back to law school and, in fact, ended up in the top half of my class. I was the outstanding student in the political science department at the end of my year. I graduated with 3 degrees from undergraduate school and 165 credits, only needed 123 credits.
Biden now concedes he did not graduate in the top half of his law school class.
that he does not have 3 degrees from college, and that he was not named outstanding political science student in college.
Newsweek says Biden actually went to school on a half scholarship, ended up near the bottom of his class, and won only 1 degree, not 3.
Joe Biden ranked 76th in a class of 85 at the University of Syracuse Law School. I mean, this guy comes off this whole thing as a flyweight.
Now Biden says Newsweek is right, his memory had failed him.
His memory failed him, right. Biden is and always has been a liar. He's not changing his spots. Just remember that as you dive into your weekend. And have a good one. We'll see you Monday. Bye-bye. 2 days off. How's that?